I've got a proposal. On LinkedIn, a lot of times to connect with somebody, you have to know their email address, right? Like you can kind of put that in as your security check or something. I think that should be the case for setting up meetings. You should have to be able to articulate the outcome of the meeting before it allows anybody to accept the invite.
I love it. Like you create like a little template, like, okay, so you put in meeting title, meeting length. And if you say 60 minutes, you could say, are you sure it's 60 minutes? Can't it be 45?
Well, first off, there would be no, it's only 20 and 45 minute options. And maybe AI could help determine if the reason for the meeting is appropriate. And if so, then the invite will actually send. If not, it just keeps giving you like an error message.
I love it. I'm sorry. Your purpose of this meeting could be an email. Please try again.
This sounds a lot like an FYI. Try again.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Touchpoint. Welcome to episode number 347. That is Chris Boyer. I'm Reed Smith.
I'm not sure that's a good enough intro, Reed. I think you're going to have to try again or I won't accept continuing to record the podcast.
Yeah, the recording will not work. It's always good to be back with another episode, another week of the show. We certainly appreciate everybody tuning in, telling a friend, and letting us know that you're a listener. It's always nice to go places and hear feedback. You know, very seldom do a couple of days roll by that I don't get an email or talk to somebody that mentions one of the shows. And so that's really cool, really, really nice to hear. If there are people that should be on, topics we should cover, et cetera, certainly let us know. While we have you, before we get into today's show, quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health. Touchpoint.health is the website. Learn a little bit more about this show, the topics we cover, et cetera. But while you're there, there's something called the TPS report. Name, email address affords you one email with five articles to kick off your week. Comes out on Mondays. Then hopefully that'll be a little value add. So we'll pause here and let you go over to the website. Again, touchpoint.health. Sign up for the TPS report and we'll be back with today's show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. So Reed, I would say maybe 18 months ago, you and I hardly ever mentioned AI on this show. In fact, I think I went back in our annals, and the very first episode in which we talked about artificial intelligence was about a year ago. We did an episode, and now it seems like every other episode or every three episodes, it's dedicated to artificial intelligence. And that led me to wonder, why is suddenly AI a thing? It's suddenly all over the place. Yeah. You can't turn to any webinar or conference without AI being the main part of what they're talking about.
Early on, it was just a fun way that we got to talk about robots or something. And now, quite honestly, it's a part of what we're doing. on a daily basis. And our folks here, you know, that write content for our websites, for example, you know, I've written all kinds of ChatGPT prompts to aid in that effort. It's practically something that we're using generative AI is on a daily basis.
And that's true of everyone. CIOs are talking about AI for digital health and digital innovation. Ed Bennett said that in one of a recent interview, he said that every week there's like a dozen or two dozen new AI digital health technology companies that have come into the marketplace, right? Not all of them are going to last, but still, it's everywhere. Generative AI has certainly become a thing. So today we should talk about why is it such a thing? But before we get to that why and learn a little bit more about the history, I think it's also important to understand how our patients in the health setting feel about artificial intelligence. So let's first dive into a recent study by the Pew Research Center, which we love the Pew Research Center.
Oh, man. I love a Pew Research study.
They did a survey of 11,000 U.S. adults at the end of 2022. They published the results, and the title is 60% of Americans would be uncomfortable with a provider relying on AI in their own healthcare. Maybe they gave away the secret of what the results are here, right?
Yep. They say that on a personal level that there is significant discomfort amongst Americans with the idea of AI being used in their own healthcare, to your point. So they say that, yeah, they have the 6 and 10 stat here that people would feel uncomfortable. A majority, they say, of the public is unconvinced that the use of AI in health and medicine would actually improve their outcomes. So only 38% say AI being used to do things like diagnose disease, recommend treatments would lead to better health outcomes for the patients generally, while 33% say it would lead to worse outcomes.
Wow.
And then 27% say that, you know, there's insignificant or no difference.
That's pretty significant, right? It's like split right in the middle. 38% said it would lead to better health outcomes. 33% says it's worse, and 27% not much. Wow. You can't get more in the middle if you do a bell curve. Yep. That's right there in the middle, right? And they say that these findings come as public attitudes towards AI continue to take shape. Just like we're talking about AI all the time now, patients are hearing about it. The general populace is talking about AI all the time too. I think in part because of ChatGPT and Bard and other things
sure.
that make it more accessible to them. But amid the ongoing adoption of AI technologies, they say across industries, and the accompanying national conversation about the benefits and risks of AI applications, suddenly we're in kind of this nexus point of like, are our consumers that excited about AI as we are in health systems?
I mean, we still think this is a good idea, right?
I think so.
I do think there is a huge opportunity, but I think this highlights those stats, you know, the third thing, you know, highlights still the road ahead that we're facing, right? Which is some sort of a, not convincing, but I do think that there's a little bit of a PR campaign here to really kind of showcase also the education around the fact that it's like, it's not autonomous, right? I mean, like people are still involved.
Yes, we know that because we're technologists. We understand that, right? But I think there is a certain kind of misconception with the average user to wonder if there is human intervention or human governance or any kind of human oversight here. Let's go a little bit further into some of the data because I think some of these stats are really a fascinating read. They said on a positive side, a larger share of Americans think that the use of AI in health and medicine would reduce rather than increase the number of mistakes made by healthcare providers. So 40% versus 27%. So that's positive, right? A reduction in the amount of errors that happen.
Yeah, and kind of along those lines or analogous to that, among the majority of Americans who see a problem with racial or ethnic bias in healthcare, there's a larger share that say the problem of bias or unfair treatment would actually get better, 51% say this, if AI was used to do things like diagnose disease or recommend treatment for patients. So I guess they see, you know, technology as more unbiased than the human perception or decision making.
And we know that a lot of people running AI algorithms are really trying to ensure that they're programming against that bias. So I think that's a positive sign. One of the concerns that Americans typically have around AI use in healthcare is about that personal connection between the patient and the healthcare provider. 57% say the use of AI to do things like diagnose disease and recommend treatments would make that patient-provider relationship worse, and only 13% says it would actually improve it. I guess those are people like you and me that really don't like to talk to people.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. Changing a little bit, gears here a little bit, the security of health records is also a source that concerns some folks, right? So 37% say that they think AI in healthcare and medicine would make the security of patient records worse compared to with 22% who think it would actually improve security. I guess, you know, this is the robots taking over the world, and all of a sudden your records end out on the web or something.
Lastly, the Pew Research Center highlighted that although Americans can identify a mix of pros and cons regarding the use of AI in health and medicine, caution remains a dominant theme in public views. When it comes to the pace of technology adoption, 3/4 of Americans surveyed say their greater concern is that we in the health systems are moving too fast to implement AI in health and medicine before we fully understand the risks for patients. And only 23% say they are more concerned that providers will move too slowly, missing opportunities to improve a patient's health. I think that's really interesting. And, you know, one thing that isn't covered here is a conversation around job loss and like how it can impact that. But I know that that's still out there too, right? There's a concern about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Outside of bias and security and things like that, there is a concern around job loss. And so, you know, this idea that AI is going to replace doctors, nurses, et cetera. I mean, you and I, again, are somewhat on the inside, even though we're not clinicians. Literally, we'll tackle and hire every nurse that we can find. So the idea that AI would replace anybody just makes no sense to me.
There's that general caution around moving slower in adoption is very important. And I know we're all thinking about AI governance and making sure that we're implementing right, safe solutions within our organization. So that makes a lot of sense. But still, there is this growing conversation around AI. It's everywhere we go. So after the break, Reed, let's talk about why AI is all over the place. And we'll do that right after this brief pause.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
All right, Chris, people are concerned, but it's still all over the place. I mean, it's hard to have a conversation anymore at work, but it's even more widely just trying to make it through a week without hearing about ChatGPT.
And generative AI in general, right? I think people are equating those together. You and I have had a recent show where we talked about AI has been around for a while, but there's many different flavors of AI. Generative AI is really the point here. Why is generative AI all over the place right now? And we found an article in the Washington Post that's called "See Why AI, Like ChatGPT, Has Gotten So Good So Fast."
Well, it's interesting, right? Because it's accessible and handy. I mean, that's obviously why people are using it. But I think because of that is why it's gotten so good so fast, right? And so we'll kind of talk about that. They start out talking about the fact that even just a short time ago, a couple of years ago, that AI created text was riddled with errors. Images were tiny, pixelated. It wasn't very good. And so it just wasn't, it was like, oh, this is kind of neat, but you know, we're just not there yet. But they say a confluence of innovations has spurred growth, breakthroughs in mathematical modeling, improvements in hardware, computing power, obviously it's gotten cheaper, et cetera. And then these massive data sets have allowed these tools to iterate and generate what is now usable that much faster.
Those three things are what we're going to talk about here. Now, this is an interesting article. It's written for the layman, but it gets really technical. And if you click on the link and you find out a little bit more about it, they actually illustrate some of the things that we're talking about in very interesting examples. But let's first talk about AI algorithms. Much of the recent growth this article puts forth stems from a new way of training AI. It's called the Transformers model. This method allows the technology to process large blocks of language quickly and to test fluency of the outcome. It came from a 2017 Google study that really became one of the most influential pieces of research around AI and AI learning. Now, previously, AI models would analyze sentences sequentially, one word at a time. They would look at a sentence, the cat slept in the sun, and it would process it one word at a time in a sequential manner. This Transformers thing, basically what it does is it looks at the words cat, sun, sleep, and understands that they're related to one another. This is a critical part around the testing of AI and understanding how to test the validity of what AI is doing when it's learning.
You know, it's looking at stuff more holistically than kind of in this linear path to some extent.
Also, by the way, it allows you to ingest billions of sentences and recognize patterns quickly. And it results in a more natural sounding response, so to speak. This is one of the big things around AI and natural language processing that has suddenly, since 2017, that's not many years there, Reed, in the history of like technology, where suddenly now you could take a thing like ChatGPT and really use it to create some great answers. But it's not just language. There's another thing that they do, which is around AI images, right? Because we know there's a whole AI image component of this. That training method is called diffusion. Diffusion, in very layman's terms, you could put in a prompt into one of these tools and say, draw me a picture of my dog riding a horse. And what it could do is it could put in a dog and a horse. It knows that pretty well. But then the in-between, the transition of a dog riding a horse, this diffusion method allows you to create hyper-realistic photos in a very simple way. So these are the AI algorithms that make AI so much better.
The next big breakthrough they talk about in the article is the rise of the supercomputer, which sounds exciting, probably more exciting than it really is. But this is what I think I kind of half mentioned this earlier when we're talking about technology getting cheaper and more effective and bigger and all that kind of stuff. But think, if you will, the more complicated, you know, a math problem is, the more computing power you need to solve it, right? So as we think about AI models, you know, the hardware has to become much more powerful to take and actually do something with all of these prompts. GPUs, or graphic processing units, you may have seen that acronym around, most commonly kind of, you know, in the gaming world, but they really have a lot of immense computing power to actually run simultaneous tasks. You need that when you're talking about like graphics, for example. So you need more GPUs to have like a better picture, if you will. Well, what's happening is researchers can actually string together thousands of these GPUs to make what they're calling a supercomputer that sits out in the cloud somewhere. You can then access it and build your own supercomputer, if you will. And that's really how it's becoming higher powered, cheaper, more readily available to the masses. I mean, this is not much different than the idea of the personal computer. You know, oh, well, nobody's going to do that. I mean, who's going to spend all this money, you know, to have a computer in their house? Like, that's absurd. Well, now for $20 a month, you're walking around with something in your pocket that's a million times more powerful than all those, you know, put together were. That's kind of what we're seeing here.
Right. And when you launch ChatGPT, it actually, and you put a prompt in, it's actually leveraging all these different computers around the world to calculate what the answer would be. That's fascinating. Yeah. So the last piece of the pie here is the data. Over the past several years, the data sets used to train AI have gotten much bigger and much better. So before, at the early stages of AI, you had low quality data because you were looking at very contained data sets. They gave an example of addresses and phone numbers, which really aren't helpful for learning natural speech, but they're really good if you're wanting to very quickly look up a phone numbers or stuff like that. Now data sets include more news articles and book transcripts that actually illustrate how we write and talk, which has in turn led to AI being able to speak, quote unquote, more fluently. Think about this. ChatGPT, before it launched, actually crawled every web page on the internet that it could, and it suddenly had all of this data, and it understood how people put sentences together. Mm-hmm. That way, when it launched, it actually sounds like it's something that's natural, that a human wrote, so to speak. That's an interesting approach to like the data, but the data has also went a little bit further, right, through these trained models.
It's interesting, right, because I guess when you train these, it's like, you know, where does it stop, right? So you start training these models around this high quality data. You got organizations, you know, building all of these data sets, combining all of these things together. And I think that's what's starting to actually produce things that are worth using. Again, back to the idea of the supercomputer, like you couldn't yourself afford to go buy this, but I mean, you can use ChatGPT for free or download some app on your phone. So just the accessibility of it all, I guess, is changing the way that we're thinking about this. You know, you've heard for some years around some of the, you know, the imaging, medical imaging and things like that, where you can use algorithms to understand or maybe find things that people have missed. There's still some obstacles, though. We haven't completely solved for everything.
Right. I mean, there's still a lot of like AI hallucinations, a lot of AI errors. And in healthcare, particularly, we're concerned about patient privacy and security and HIPAA and all of those things. The models are expensive to run. That's why ChatGPT has a paid option to it. And that's why most organizations that use ChatGPT, they're using the paid option. They confidently churn out, as the article says, wrong, nonsensical, and sometimes biased answers while creating lifelike images that could sow confusion. That isn't holding back technology companies. Google has it now in their search engines, bard.google.com, you can go to. Microsoft is releasing copilots in their Office suite. And again, all of these companies are starting to leverage AI to do a bunch of different things, video, music, detection tools, healthcare. Let's talk about healthcare particularly, because there are certain parts of healthcare where AI is being applied.
Let's talk about digital health for a second. So AI is being used to develop new digital health tools, applications, I think virtual reality for like surgery training, chatbots, which chatbots is not new, right? Like we've seen those around for some time. You got some wearable devices for remote patient monitoring. We've talked a little bit about that. We're even seeing it across a number of different things. I think the virtual nursing and using AI for like decision support in that environment is kind of interesting.
Then you have your digital transformation efforts, right? Which is where AI is being used to automate tasks, improve efficiency, make better decisions. AI-powered chatbots can answer questions 24/7, for example, or algorithms can help doctors diagnose diseases. And you were just recently at Epic's user group. That AI is all built in now into Epic and all of the different platforms. And the whole point there is to make things much more efficient.
Yeah, and it really kind of falls into that what you're talking about there, the decision-making, right? So you think about like drafting responses, summarizing information, translation services, things like that. Yeah, we're not delivering information directly to the patient without a human being there, but it does create an efficiency. Next thing is innovation. So being used to develop new and innovative ways to deliver care itself. So for example, say AI-powered robots performing surgery, AI-powered virtual assistants, you know, giving some sort of personalized care plans.
Digital therapeutics, for sure. And then lastly, digital experience strategies. AI is being used to improve the patient experience. And that's the world that you and I have spent a lot of time in. For example, AI-powered chatbots can answer questions through various different ways, through a website, through MyChart, and things like that. Or AI-powered virtual assistants can help patients manage their health conditions, reach out to them on a regular basis to ensure compliance, those sorts of things. And that's all designed to help with experience. So, I mean, those are some general applications of why AI is just all over. You know, I think it would be good for us to maybe take a pause here. I recently sat down with Alan Shoebridge from Provenance. He shared with me about he is thinking about and applying AI, and particularly generative AI, solutions with his team, focusing on healthcare marketing and communications. So after this break, we'll go to that interview with Alan, and then you and I will be back to close out the show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome back to the Ask the Expert segment of the podcast. And guess who I have back on the show with me today? That's our good friend, Alan Shoebridge. Alan, welcome back.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here.
I'm excited that you're here. You know, I keep reading the things that you're posting on LinkedIn and just keeping a track of all the stuff that you're doing. You're doing some pretty interesting stuff out there. And one thing in particular that really jumped out at me is you're going to be speaking at the Shishman conference coming up about AI. And since we have a quota to hit every fourth episode of Touchpoint, we talk about AI, I thought it would be great to have you on the show and get your take on artificial intelligence and how it's being used in our space.
It's a great topic that I think so many of us, including myself, you know, 11 months ago, it was on our radar, but kind of barely. And then as ChatGPT took off as kind of a phenomenon, it's really changed things. And I think, you know, we've come so far in such a short period of time. I know it's, you know, if you haven't gotten into it already, you're just days or weeks away from probably doing that. So it's I think it's really a timely topic, but one that has a lot of potential impact on our industry.
Excited to jump into it with you. But before we do, I always want our guests to share a little bit about their background and what they do today. Do you mind just sharing for those few people listening in that may not know you a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I've worked in healthcare marketing and communication roles for, you know, it pains me to say it, but more than 20 years, I think, at this point. Wow. And, you know, I've worked at a number of healthcare systems, kind of large and small. And, you know, but most of my career has been spent. My current role is at Providence, and Providence is a 7-state healthcare system, you know, mostly on the West Coast. We have more than 50 hospitals, so a large footprint across the West Coast. And I'm currently the Associate Vice President of National Communications for Providence.
And you do a lot of great stuff in that role. And part of that role is the consideration of AI and how it's being used in the work that you do. So before we jump into that specific question, though, I always want to start off by saying, give us your 411. What's your perspective on artificial intelligence and why it's so widely talked about and used now?
If I had to sum it up, I'd probably say I'm sort of cautiously optimistic with a healthy dose of the caution part of it. Because I think when I first saw it, I had thought about AI. I hadn't really been, you know, using it, but I thought about it. And, you know, prior to, you know, last November, I had thought of it more in terms of like, what does this mean for society or what does this do for jobs? But I didn't really think about necessarily how would I use this in my day to day or, you know, how could my team leverage this? I hadn't thought about that at all. And then, you know, when ChatGPT kind of exploded, I remember getting a text from, you know, one of our leaders at Providence, like, hey, look what this can do. And I was like, wow. And, you know, I signed up, I used it, and I was like, ooh, this thing is amazing. And then the more I used it, the more I thought, well, this is pretty interesting, but there are some limitations here. And then, of course, you know, you start thinking about some of the considerations and cautions that we've all been talking about in terms of, you know, the accuracy of the information, copyright, all that stuff. So I went from a place of like, oh my gosh, maybe this can replace me in 3 months or something. And then I thought about, well, wait a second, this is more of a tool that can really help us in various ways. And then I would say too, over the last few months, really been thinking about what it can do within the organization as a whole as well, because this really does have an ability. And I think, you know, for both the clinical side and all the non-clinical side of care, I think AI can really be an extender of our workforce. We're not going to get more people on the clinical side. And the people who are doing marketing and communication, other roles, you know, there's a lot of work that can be helped, you know, help that burnout piece if you have a tool that can actually assist you. So as we've started using it, and I've started using it myself, I'm seeing where it's, you know, it helps take the edges off. It helps kind of with some tasks that you can get some assistance with. But also, again, with a lot of cautious approach to it, where you want to make sure it's adding value, want to make sure it's safe, and want to make sure all those considerations around, you know, security and privacy are all there. So there, I think it's a very developing thing and something that I thought was just going really fast, and it still is. But I think that cautious approach to it means we're really going to be careful about how we implement it. And, you know, for myself, how I use it.
I think ChatGPT was sort of the domino that tipped this hype cycle that we're currently on. And I still think of ChatGPT as a little bit of a parlor trick, a little bit of a fun little thing, because it's cool, but it also, you once you start to use it a little bit, you know where the gaps and the weaknesses are in the tool itself. It has a really interesting premise, and I think it's because, A, it has a great amount of data to source on, right? It went out there and scraped everything on the internet in order to power it. Without anybody's permission, by the way, just so you know, right? Anything that's free, it's scraped it all. And then secondly, the tools are there now. The whole concept of machine learning and natural language processing is such that you can actually enable these things together with this great rich data source to do some interesting things. And right away, when I first saw it, I was like looking at opportunities in marketing and communications in which you could use it to help expand what you do currently. Now, I never looked at it as like a replacement for what I do, but I always look at it as like something to supplement what I do. Is that kind of your perspective too?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. And I think of it, especially in my current role today, you know, on the public relations communication side, I think that even the simple tools have great capability for editing or taking a piece of content that's long form and creating a couple, you know, shorter things, you know, take a 1,000-word article, cut it down for, you know, a smaller publication, make social media posts out of it. Now, again, you still have to do some review and editing of that, but that's using content that you developed and using the AI tool to basically kind of do some different things with it. And that can save time, you know, and I was even working on a project, internal project, where I wanted to create some scripting for something. And so I said, well, let's see what the AI can do with a first pass at this script if I give them the right prompts. And it was good, but it needed a lot of work. But it probably saved me about 2 hours of preliminary work just getting the first draft done, right? So things like that, they really like, it kind of extends your ability to do work. But I've drawn some clear lines around where I think that it's risky, which is I will not personally use AI to develop any sort of blog post or social media content that I'm putting out for myself, because I don't know what it's scraping. And I think there's a lot of authenticity questions and things like that, that I just don't feel like I ever want to present my voice and use something AI generated. So personally, I take that stand. And then sort of at the organization and our content, I'm really careful with anything that's going to go external. And I think, you know, what we've seen in using the tool is, you know, trying to use it a lot for internal communications and things that, again, we can take an idea, get something in there, but there's not a lot of risk from, you know, a copyright standpoint or whatever. So I'm just very careful with anything that goes external. You know, if you're using one of these LLMs to do your content, it's not going to be original, and that's very risky. And, you know, again, I think there's a fairness piece to the scraping that did of taking people's content and then, you know, putting it out as your own or your organization's. I think that's where we really have to avoid that at all costs.
I think part of it is I'm trying to use AI parlance. I'm not an AI programmer at all, but it's how you prompt it, right? How you prompt the tool itself. If you come into it with no prompt, or you give it open-ended free form, like come up with your own ideas, like help me write a blog post about my dog, that's where you run into risk. Who knows where it's borrowing that information from? Assumptively, it's like all the different places online. But when you go into it with like, I have this 1,000-word blog post, and can you do an edit for me? Or can you SEO this copy using these keywords? Now you're prompting it. You're putting language into it and you're prompting it to use it. But let me ask you something about this, Alan, because I think the one thing that we've got to be very cautious about, and I think you kind of addressed it here, is how do we actually use it? You said you don't use it for external purposes. So does that mean you don't like SEO pages on your website or things like that? You're only using it for internal comms?
Yes. But, you know, again, like I think that's going to evolve. And then also my specific role is not a lot of the web and, you know, marketing uses for this. And I think that's a kind of a different area. But when I look at the communication, so if we're putting out a, you know, blog post about something we're doing at Providence, or we're doing a press release, or we're doing, you know, media pitching, you know, again, that's where I would use extreme caution with the tool. I might take something that we've done and run it through and say, again, like, we have a 1,000-word blog post, but like, what if we did want to make, you know, some social content out of this? Or what if we did want to, you know, do a media pitch? How would you boil it down? So we might do that. But, you know, another area of caution I have around putting anything unique in the tool, anything we put in these tools becomes their property, right? So if I write something really interesting and unique, that's going to be train their content in the future. And so I might be like plagiarizing myself without even thinking about it or the organization. So I really do give a lot of caution in putting anything into that tool.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, right? It does suddenly become their property. But again, I believe they may have already scraped our websites, right? So like, where does that line cross, right? I know that ChatGPT just recently released code that you could plug on your website to prevent it from crawling your site in the future. But the damage is already done.
Agreed. And I think the thing for me is like, and I'll use a personal example, but if I'm going to write a blog post about leadership and I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this on my personal blog and I'm going to put it on my social media. If I even put that content into, you know, Bard or ChatGPT, and those Bard and ChatGPT are the kind of ones I use a lot when I'm like, oh, maybe I'll iterate a headline or I'll do something. But if I put the entire blog post in there, I know that they could scrape my website in the future or they, whatever. But I kind of feel like I just don't feel comfortable putting my original content in there, because at that point, it's making it even easier for the next person who's like, write me a blog post about leadership. And then, oh my goodness, if I see that down the road, I'm like, wait, did they plagiarize me? Or can they say that I plagiarized them? I feel much more confident if I'm going to be presenting something as my authentic viewpoint to not use, you know, AI to generate any part of the content, really. You know, and that's kind of like the line in the sand for me at this point. And then when I'm thinking about the organization's content, again, if it's going to be externally facing, especially, I really want to err on the authenticity piece side of it.
Yeah, you did say, though, that you posted it on social media, blog post. I mean, by that point, then it's the property of the social media platform. We are kind of dealing with rented land and rented tools online, aren't we?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I just feel like there's something in my work process where at this point, even if it's going to get scraped and you know, they can get it in the future, I just feel better about saying, like, this piece of content that I developed was basically AI free. One of the discussions you see a lot on social media is this thing of like, well, you know, AI is going to be awesome because it can just pump out so much content. And my thing is, like, we don't have a shortage of content. We have a shortage of good content. We have a shortage of really authentic, maybe, voices for content. But I think there is this scenario where, like, you're just, if you get into the mode of like, well, I just need AI to pump out, you know, my every social post I do and every blog post I do, and like, yes, it's great because it can do 10 a day or whatever, my goodness, like, we're just flooding the zone with more content, and it's not going to be good content, it's going to be very mediocre. So I still feel like, especially for people who are interested in sharing their own personal perspectives, you know, on their blog or social, like, keep it authentic, resist this urge. Yeah, it can pump something out for you, but it's not going to be good.
It'll be as good as what ChatGPT or Bard can do for you, right? Based on these public sources. And you don't know where the sources are coming from anyway, so you could be plagiarizing. You said one thing that kind of triggered in my mind a thought, where you like to say proudly that this was written AI-free. Are we going to start to see, like on blog posts, kind of statement like that at the very end or at the beginning that says this content was written without any AI support?
You know, I have seen a couple people do that. And actually, I did it once as kind of just a joke when I was writing one of my first blog posts about AI. I think that people have us following already on social or kind of have a voice. They probably don't have to do it because I think people know that what they're reading and seeing is authentic. But, for other people, as they're getting established, I don't know, maybe. I really feel like, you know, where we are in the stage of content right now is, you know, it's funny when you'll see someone say, oh, you know, AI can make a song just like Taylor Swift or whatever, right? And you're like, well, kind of. But the whole point of why people like Taylor Swift is not only the music, They like her. They like the backstory of who she is. They like, you know, the concert experience. So sure, it can pump out, you know, a reasonable facsimile that's just, you know, scraping everything together. But what human beings actually want from content is a level of authenticity, backstory. Like when I post something about, you know, what's going on in healthcare or whatever, the people in my network know that I'm speaking from a place of authority and experience. And maybe they don't always like it, or maybe they disagree, but they know it's authentic. And so that authenticity piece of content right now is king. And again, so you can use AI to pump out all sorts of stuff. One of my least favorite is anyone who advises, like, use AI to write all your responses to comments in social media. I'm like,
oh, wow.
There's no value to that. I feel like authenticity is just, is the king right now. And where AI can help with some of your work or some of your tasks or getting started, that's great. But you just have to be very careful about that. You're not, you know, removing that authenticity piece.
I think you heard it here first. Alan is saying that content is no longer king. Authentic content is king. So is that right?
Yeah. You know, but although I would say, I don't know if it ever really changed, because I think of every music act I've ever liked, right? I was always interested in the backstory. Like, who are these people? You know, like how many biographies have been written about, you know, the Rolling Stones or whatever, right? Yeah. The music is one thing. The backstory makes it even more interesting. That's how you connect. And, you know, I think even for other forms of content, books, movies, all those TV shows, like, you're kind of interested in the fact that there's like a human doing this creative expression, and that, yeah, just, you can't just plug anyone in there. I mean, you can, but it's not going to be good.
But here's the thing. I was speaking on a panel a couple weeks ago with CIOs, and they're talking about generative AI's use in clinical care. It's being used extensively, and organizations are adopting. I'm sure Providence is adopting it in certain cases. They need to. In fact, one CIO said, if you're not implementing an AI solution today, you're going to be behind the curve in 10 years, right? Or 5 years. So we all need to be doing it, but they're all looking at some sort of AI governance model. Tell me a little bit about how you see AI governance and creating the rules and kind of guidelines for your team. How do you approach that?
And we're actually getting into that process too. And I think actually some meetings coming up just in the fall, you know, early fall, to really put this in place. And I know there's been a lot of conversations, and there's been things that are, you know, already implemented, but we are looking as an organization whole, like, you know, what is that governance structure? And, you know, even filtering down for, there's sort of an organizational governance structure, but there's also a governance structure for within communications, within marketing, some of those departments too. So I think that'll happen. Yeah, I think some of the questions that come up and are going to be addressed by these governance models is really like, you know, what's the level of transparency on these tools? I feel like there's a lot of great use cases for AI trying to be, you know, again, a supplement to your physician. If you have questions, like, what could it answer? And I think the key is on the governance piece is, well, how transparent are you? Do you disclose that this is an AI model? Do you disclose that you're talking to a bot, whatever? That's been one of the things I found fascinating, is some, you know, services and organizations try to make their AI experience seem human, like you're actually talking to a human. I'm like, I don't know if that's the right thing to do. Maybe it's better to just say, use our AI powered, you know, assistant to get answers to common questions. And like, okay, well, you know what you're dealing with. You're dealing with another input to a question you have, but you can use your knowledge of understanding like what this is and where the information came from to really kind of make you feel confident in the results. Like, I think that's an interesting question to pursue, is like how much transparency do you give about, you know, what type of AI models people are interacting with. So there's that. And I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of probably questions too about privacy and data and security and all that. People are putting inputs into these tools. You know, how do we make sure that we're doing everything we can to make it safe? You know, there's going to probably be some of these tools that are going to have to be internally built models so that, you know, you control all the data and it doesn't go external. The tools, to some degree, there have been, you know, AI assisted scheduling, other things that actually have been in place for a while. But they're just not as, you know, like interesting and sexy as, you know, the new, whatever ChatGPT has been doing or what Microsoft's going to get into, that kind of stuff.
And the application of like natural language processing is a whole nother thing, right? Being able to maybe review a chart and translate it into something the patient actually understands, lab results, that sort of thing. It's a little bit different, right? Generative AI is a thing, I think, is a slippery slope because of the whole word generative, right? It generates something. It takes inputs and it creates something new. That's the whole concept around ChatGPT. That's why we like it, because it's fun and it's interesting. But again, you know, it's not authentic, calling back to what you said earlier. And I think that that's the rub there, because AI becomes useful if it has a lot of data to help drive the generative part and the natural language processing part of it. So it has to have context and data to kind of support that. But we can't do that when it comes to patient protected information, et cetera. So I'm just wondering, you know, as we look forward for like what marketing and communications, how they could start to use it, I see limited use cases. I would love to hear what your thoughts are on the use cases.
I think, you know, the use cases to me right now are evolving and developing. So I'm kind of with you. Like, I think they're maybe more narrow and they're probably going to grow over time, which just makes sense. But, you know, for right now, like, again, when I'm thinking, especially on the communication side and, you know, looking at how my team and, you know, our extended department can use it, I feel like we should be looking at it as, again, are there tasks or barriers that these tools can help with, like cut things down in terms of time? Even if some of these tools could save you an hour a day, like, would it be great to use it? You know, we're really kind of experimenting with that. And we're kind of pulling together a small work group, even within our own communication team, of like, let's just start using these tools as a person. If you find a use case that you think like could spread to the whole department and go like, hey, I found this great tool. And, you know, I know that 5 of you or 10 of you are also using, you might also benefit from this because I know you're doing this specific task. Like, here's where we should try using it. So I feel like we're kind of in this experimental phase right now, you know, and that's another challenge. And this is another thing I see on social media that makes my head kind of explode every time is someone will post, here's the 45 AI tools you need to look at today. And I'm like, 45 tools is way too many tools. Yep. If we could get it down to 5, you know, or 3, that again could save us an hour to a couple hours a day or whatever, that'd be great. And again, I would use caution on the volume aspect of this. Does not appeal to me. Like, let's use AI tools to make 10x our content output. I think that's a huge mistake. But I think if we look at it as in, let's use AI to be more efficient, reduce burnout, extend our workforce, have people, you know, focus on more strategic tasks if they can. Like, I think those are the good use cases. But we're still trying to figure it out and just really do some experiments. So again, I think, you know, if you really look at, I don't think this journey on sort of the generative AI started for many organizations, especially within healthcare. You know, if you're looking at the marketing and communication space, I don't think this journey started prior to really last November. So what are we? We're like 10 months into this. It's still really early in the development phase.
I totally agree with you 100% on that. We are in the early stages, and what we know of these tools today can completely change. It's kind of like social media. You know, when social media first came out, we were all like high on this is a great way to communicate and breaks down the barriers of, you know, patients communicating with organizations. And we're, you know, but all those things we kind of talked about, some of them manifested to be true, but it also evolved and became something different. And I think we're going to see that too. Let me ask you this, Alan. Is this like sort of the prelude or precursor to the panel session you're going to be on at Shishmid?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks to you. Thank you for bringing that up. I think this is going to be a really exciting topic. And, you know, I'm going to be on the panel and how I'm covering it is really, again, sort of that use case for what, you know, you should do as a strategist in healthcare, what you should think about, how you should get involved in this, and really sort of from that perspective. And then we have a couple other really great speakers who will be talking about sort of the operational piece and, you know, how they're using it and how they're seeing healthcare systems use it on that really patient care clinical side. So I think it'll be a good conversation, whether you're sort of interested in the topic from like what's going on with how this can affect, you know, patient care and staffing. And if you're interested in the also like, how can we use this on a personal level to balance around workloads or get more effective in what we do? Like, I think it's going to hit it from all those angles. It's exciting. And I, you know, my biggest takeaway, I'll share, you know, my number one takeaway from people from this session is that, you know, there's some skepticism around this that's warranted, but you can't fear it. It's not useful to just fear it. You got to think critically about what's happening and you've got to get involved in the conversation. And that means, you know, starting to use these tools, figure out what it means. That's my biggest thing. I just want people to not be stuck in a fear cycle and, wow, this is, you know, all bad. No, I mean, there's a lot of great things that have come from this. And it really as anything, as you talk about social media, you've got to be involved in understanding what's going on. And that's the key thing.
Don't just wait until the solutions find themselves. Be out there at the cutting edge and start to figure it out yourself. But as you know, we started, right? Proceed with caution.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Alan, I think that people that are going to the Shishmid conference this year, they need to seek out your panel. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. What are some other ways that people can find you online?
Yeah, so love to connect with anyone on LinkedIn. I'm also still on Twitter, but you know, calling it X. I don't know. I can't get around. I still call it Twitter. LinkedIn and Twitter for social. And then also I have a web and blog site, which is just my name, alanshoebridge.com.
Now we'll put that all into the show notes. Alan, thanks for jumping on today and talking a little bit about AI and your thoughts around it. I think you shared some really interesting insights with our audience.
Well, thanks for having me. It'll be fascinating to see this topic progress. You know, what the next 11 months might have in store for us. It's going to be an exciting time.
We'll have to have you back on and see how it has changed. Thanks again, Alan.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right. Special thanks to Alan for coming on the show, spending time with us. It's always great to have other experts come on and talk and share points of view. So appreciate his time. A couple of quick plugs. Touchpoint.health is the website. We mentioned the TPS report earlier. It also has links to upcoming conferences and events. So be sure to sign up and you can get to some of that information as well. Before we call it a week, we'll do a couple of recommendations. What do you got?
Today, Reid, I'm going to recommend a TV show that I've recommended before in earlier seasons, and it's just come out with season 3. It's on Hulu. It's called Only Murders in the Building. This is a really funny show. It stars Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. They play three tenants in a large apartment building in New York who happen to be involved in a murder that occurs, and they start a subsequent podcast that makes some amateur sleuths to try to determine who actually murdered the person of that season. It's now in season 3, and it is hilarious as ever. It happens to be that in season 3, it kicks off with Martin Short, who has a day job of producing Broadway plays, is producing a play starring a character played by Paul Rudd, who dies. Season 3 is all about, well, who killed Paul Rudd's character. And amazing cast, very hilarious. They're 30-minute episodes. It's syndicated every week. And it's about our favorite topics, Reid, true crime and podcasts. You can't go wrong.
There you go. I love it. Well, I'm going to stick with today's theme and go with, everybody's heard of ChatGPT, but you're always, I'm always looking at like different apps and things like that. So this is an iOS app. You can download it on your phone. You can also just go to the website. So you think generative AI, kind of creation and things like that. Perplexity is the name of it. So perplexity.ai is the website. You can also just find it in the iOS store. What's kind of interesting about this one, you can ask it any questions or have it do stuff, much like you've probably seen on some of the other, like ChatGPT or other sites. But there's also a discover tab. And I guess this is showing, what other people have asked. And so you can kind of scroll through, I'm looking here, tips to avoid fake job scams is one. What is the Milky Way? Storks and babies legend. Anyway, it's just kind of funny to kind of scroll through here and see some of these other things. Classic pesto recipes. I'm almost wondering and kind of seeing this as like the new search engine, right? Kind of what this is. But anyway, I like the interface. I like the UI. You can obviously do a lot with it. You can keep up with your threads and stuff like that. But I plugged in a few things about writing job descriptions and it's amazing. It's like, oh, well, yeah, that's a good job description. Let's just go with that, kind of thing. So it's good. So anyway, if you're looking for one to kind of try out or test and doesn't charge you and all that kind of stuff. Perplexity is a good one to go look at.
It's really cool. And one of their discoveries is, what's the most popular podcast categories?
Oh boy, there you go.
Yeah, true crime is number 4, by the way.
That makes sense.
Comedy is number 1. But you know, digital experience strategies didn't make the top 6.
Hmm.
We're going to have to work on that, Reed.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? All right. Well, hey, thanks, everybody. We certainly appreciate you listening. It's a fun topic. We'd love to hear kind of how you're thinking about generative AI, how you're using it, not using it, what pushback you're getting, what ideas you're getting from around your organization. Ask questions, things like that. So reach out to us. LinkedIn is probably the easiest way to track us down. We certainly appreciate all the support and hope everybody has a good rest of the week. This is Chris Boyer. I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.